Welcome to the Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice podcast. Our goal is to prioritize prevention conversations that matter. Our topic for today is Third Spaces, Lifelines for Aging Communities, with special guests Dr. Jarmin Ye and Dr. Melissa Cannon. Now here's our host, Holly Raffel.
Hello, and welcome to episode 7 of season 2 on Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. This podcast is hosted by the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. My name is Holly Raffel, and I have the privilege of serving as faculty director of the center. This month, the center is focusing on strong connections for older adults. Today's podcast will focus on a new-to-me term, third spaces. Mackenzie Kay, one of our Voinovich Research Scholar alumni, introduced me to this term, and once I learned more, it really resonated. A third space is where people go to relax and socialize outside of their home or work and school. It's a spot like a coffee shop, a gym, a church where you can meet up with friends or just hang out. These spaces are crucial for preventing loneliness and isolation, which became really clear to us during the pandemic when we couldn't go to our usual spots. For older adults, having third spaces is important, especially when navigating the loss of the workspace upon retirement or finding a new sense of their home space when they lose a spouse or move to a new city to be closer to caregivers. Plus, as people age, it can be harder to get around, which can limit access to third spaces. Sometimes third spaces end up being healthcare environments. It's a common challenge for physical therapists to gently discharge patients who formed a strong connection to the clinic as a kind of a third space where they feel seen, heard, and valued. As preventionists, it may be helpful to consider ways in which third spaces can be used to promote mental health or serve as a venue to deliver evidence-based prevention programming services to older adults. That's why we couldn't be any more thrilled to introduce our two guests today, Jarmin Ye and Melissa Cannon, to today's episode. Dr. Jarmin Ye is an associate professor in the Institute for Aging and Health, Department of Social Behavioral Sciences, in the School of Nursing at University of California, San Francisco. They are a sociologist, gerontologist, and age-friendly cities and health researcher. Their work broadly investigates social justice issues that impact quality of life of community-dwelling older adults, people living with dementia, and caregivers. Dr. Melissa Cannon is an associate professor of gerontology at Western Oregon University. She specializes in environmental gerontology and teaches courses such as Introduction to Gerontology, Alzheimer's and Other Dementia Management, and Housing and Long-Term Care for Older Adults. Her research interests include age-friendly environments, community partnerships, and policies that help create healthy, inclusive communities for people across the life course. Welcome, and thank you for joining us, Jarmin and Melissa. So our listeners really enjoy getting to know our guests beyond the bio. As such, we always hold some time at the beginning of the show where you can share with our listeners something about who you are beyond the bio I just read. Maybe share a little bit about what your work looks like on the daily, which part of your work you enjoy most, or a little nugget about who you are as a person. Jarmin, let's start with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on this podcast. It's a true honor. A little bit about myself. Well, on sort of the daily, something that I really enjoy doing more recently is actually commuting to work. I'm a big fan of public transit, so I take our public bus. And the bus line that I ride on snakes through the city diagonally from where I live to my campus where I work. And I find it's just a great way to sort of see the city, see the different neighborhoods of the city, and be around all the other commuters that are heading to work. And that was a piece of sort of my daily work that was kind of missing during the pandemic while we were working from home. As a sociologist, I always enjoy sort of observing my environment and sort of people watching and seeing what kinds of routines and patterns are happening in my city. And so kind of just organically, it's a little piece of doing field work every time I take the bus to work. So I really enjoy sort of that element of it and coming to commuting into the office.
Absolutely. Like for me, I live in a rural space. And so to even think about that, that sounds amazing to do on the daily. Melissa, how about you?
Sure. And yeah, thank you so much for having us. This is really, like Jarmin said, an honor to be here. And I will also just share a little bit about how I engage with my community. I live in a rural small town environment, but it's a very vibrant town. and right along the Willamette River in the Willamette Valley in Oregon. And I live just with my husband and my orange kitty and a six-year-old cattle dog, and as of this weekend, a cattle dog puppy mix. So, or a mix that's a puppy. So I love getting out and, you know, walking the dog or now dogs, and just really getting to know my neighbors and getting involved in the community and supporting local businesses. And I think that's what, you know, really has informed, I think my research has been reflected in my lifestyle, but also my lifestyle is really informs my research and my teaching on a regular basis. So that's just a little bit about me.
Well, thank you both for being willing to share a little bit about yourselves. And I do think it's interesting how our work lives and our home lives sort of intersect into who we are and what we do. And that really leads us into kind of this third space of where we like to be. And I provided a very brief definition according to my understanding of third spaces. But I'm wondering if you could elaborate on the definition a little more, or maybe provide an example to set the stage for our listeners. Jarman, why don't you go first?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, you know, we think about home spaces and work spaces as sort of first and second places. And then the third place are really sort of public and commercial places outside of the home or workplace. And so this is a concept that was really sort of put forward by Ray Oldenburg and Eric Kleinenberg to sort of suggest these are places that are the heart of public life, where a diversity of people can come together or cross through or interact and meet each other and meet their needs. And so they're really quite informal in the way that they operate socially. And some of them, as I mentioned, are public. So it could be a park. And some of them could be commercial spaces. So it could be cafes and bars. So they're quite wide ranging. And if we think about sort of it's how we spend our time, you know, there are many places that we go to outside of home or work. And so it encapsulates a wide variety of the type of places that we might encounter on any given day. And maybe Melissa might have some specific examples, particularly as it pertains to older adults.
Yeah, I think that was an excellent description, and I'll just add that they have really been described as kind of like the heart of informal life. Robert Putnam is a sociologist who's argued that, you know, like we really have over the course of the year, like several years, we have really privatized or individualized our leisure time, and it's important for us to have these places in our community where we can really have, you know, that opportunity for social exchange. Eric Kleinenberg described these as places that, you know, where we can exchange social values. And so it's really important, actually, really for the for a democratic society to have these spaces. They also have a lot of researchers have looked at kind of the importance of having bridging capital versus bonding capital. And bridging capital is sort of where you really have an opportunity to exchange with people who are different from you, rather than just bonding capital, which is certainly important, but it's more kind of socializing and connecting with the people that are more similar to you in certain ways. So this is kind of the social infrastructure that we're talking about. And I think for older adults, or as we get older, it is vital for us to have these places for care and connection. As you know, a big topic in the public health world is how prolonged social isolation and loneliness are major problems that we're seeing right now. They're basically equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day in terms of increasing, you know, your risk for chronic illnesses. And so we need to be thinking about these places as opportunities for, you know, enhancing social connectedness and reducing isolation. We can get more into kind of specific examples maybe a little bit later, but that gives you a little bit idea of the importance of them, at least.
Absolutely. Thank you both for setting the stage for our conversation today. And for those of you who are enjoying our podcast while walking through your favorite third spaces or biking or just on the go listening in your car, we'll put the links to the resources that Melissa offered in the show notes today so you don't have to worry about jotting those down. So as you were talking, I was thinking about virtual third spaces. So there are countless ways that people interact virtually in digital and post-pandemic area, which has me wondering, can third spaces be virtual? And if they can, what are the strengths and limitations of virtual third spaces? Jarwin, what do you think?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. And I feel like technology is evolving so rapidly in our lives that it's really hard to sort of have a concrete answer. But I would say absolutely, yes, virtual places can be third spaces. And the way in which technology in all of our lives are becoming so tech-enabled, we're using technology in third places already as it is. And so the integration of the physical places and virtual places is really starting to blend much, much more in our everyday lives. I think one of the interesting realms, and again, thinking about some of the communities that I've been a part of, particularly during the pandemic, when we had these social distancing policies, people had to shift online to connect and to socialize and to meet certain needs. And so we saw in a very short period of time, this sort of rapid increase of people connecting with each other online and sort of creating these third places that maybe before the pandemic, people, you know, sort of would find socialization in other areas. So I do see that virtual places can become third places. And I think that this is such an evolving space in all of the different platforms and apps and forums, the social media platforms that we have that exist, how people are getting their news and communicating with each other are all, I think, amazing example of these communities that have formed through virtual network. And I think we're really at the very beginning of fully understanding just exactly how technology and third places sort of interact and intersect. But, you know, even in what we think is more traditional or historical third places like parks and libraries, those are all quite tech enabled as well in their own ways. And so people are sort of weaving in and out of third places virtually and sort of in real life. At any given moment, all the time. So it's a fascinating new realm of thinking about this topic.
Jarwin, it really is fascinating because I think when I was doing the research and kind of putting together my notes for today, I was thinking more of exclusively face-to-face third spaces and exclusively virtual third spaces. But as I hear you talk, I think there's really a hybrid third space, right?
Yeah, I think so. And again, sort of like I feel like relatively new, this phenomenon that we're witnessing and all of the adaptations that we made during the pandemic, I think also sort of quickened the way that we have created these hybrid third places that are tech enabled and we're sort of weaving in and out between the two through our smartphones and all of the different ways that folks are connecting with each other.
Melissa, in the beginning of our podcast today, you mentioned you have interest in, you know, age-friendly environments. So could you elaborate a little bit on why third spaces are particularly important for the older adult population?
Sure. Because of the sort of issues around loneliness and social isolation, especially during the pandemic, you know, we know that these are really places that serve as, you know, spaces for care and connection. You know, they are beneficial for sociability. And I guess, you know, in terms of age-friendly communities, one of the areas that I've done a lot of research is specifically on senior centers. These are sort of anchors in the community for all kinds of services and resources for older adults. They are, I think, number one places where people come to have connection. They can come and share a meal. They can drop in and out, you know, have coffee, go to a class, you know, participate in yoga or whatever other kind of exercise activity that they would like. And I think that, you know, these are spaces that are really needed for for community members. They need to have places where they are able to, you know, come for a variety of things. It contributes all in to health and wellness in a variety of different ways. You know, when you think about, you know, not just physical, but socio-emotional health, and even spiritual health. And so, yeah, senior centers are definitely like, when we talk about third spaces for older adults or for people who are getting older, these are particularly places that I think we need to try to support in our communities as the older population continues to grow.
Absolutely. And you talked in the beginning about how, you know, third spaces and social isolation and loneliness not only helps our social emotional health, but also our physical health as well. Given that, how aware do you think that the population in general has an awareness of the importance and value of third spaces like senior centers?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think that I think with like a lot of things that are good for us, I think people naturally know that, you know, they're drawn to places that make them feel good. I think a lot of people are just naturally inclined and they get in the habit of, you know, going to a particular place because they know that's where they're getting, you know, their cup filled, you know, they're getting that social need met. And, you know, it contributes to their health, but they may not make that connection. They may not kind of realize the connection between, you know, going to that place and how it really benefits their health. And so that's why I think it's really important for us to be kind of doing more of this research and sharing more of this research, because I'm not sure how much people are aware.
Especially, you know, city planners and people who are decision makers, right? And so when they're designing community and community spaces, how do we keep those things in mind to ensure that everyone has access to third places? So in the chapter you each co-authored in the Handbook on Aging in Place, Aging in Third Places, you write about many barriers that can interrupt an older adult's engagement with third spaces. In that section, it's noted that many businesses or commercialized third spaces. And a few examples of these places were pubs, bars, breweries, and casinos. So as health and economic conditions shift with age, how can those of us in prevention and health promotion support older adults in making lower risk choices without jeopardizing their social connections in these spaces? Melissa, I think you have some area of expertise in this area. What do you think?
Sure. You know, I think when we talk about third places, there's all kinds of different examples, right? And some of them are just naturally going to support people's health. Like, you know, if people are meeting at a library rather than going out, you know, to certain spaces, like, you know, that's meeting their social needs, also even their financial health needs. You know, volunteering is a great way for people to be engaged, and, you know, going repeatedly to a place for volunteering could help meet their health needs. You know, going and hanging out at a park meets our sort of, it's like nature therapy, right? So I think as much as possible, if we can encourage people to use those kinds of places that really contribute to wellness. Some researchers have argued for, you know, the use of fourth places, which are kind of more thinking about places that are like for walking, or, you know, like with art murals, maybe alleyways, pocket parks, more informal social spaces that bring strangers together in like a lively, inclusive manner. And this is what you'll see with a lot of the work that like AARP is doing to encourage more livable communities, is they are supporting initiatives that encourage the use of these kind of creative and inclusive spaces that do contribute to wellness rather than you know, the places that we might think of that support maybe more unhealthy habits. So if we can kind of shift people into those places that, you know, they're getting that same need met, you know, in terms of social connection, but maybe doing it in a more of a way that supports their other health domains as well, I think that that's probably what we should be hoping for.
Yeah. And that really speaks to the need for continued research into third and now fourth spaces. Moving forward, especially as we are looking at social isolation and loneliness being a public health issue. So Melissa, some of your work notes how this commercialization of third spaces has contributed to what you call placelessness. Can you describe placelessness for our listeners?
Well, sure. Yeah, we write in our paper about how, you know, with a lot of commercialized spaces are, you know, they're really focused on profit. You know, you might have heard of there was a book published a while ago, The McDonaldization of Society. There's a lot of maybe corporate businesses that, you know, regardless of where you are, they all look identical. And, you know, for some people, I think that can offer feelings of like comfort and stability. And for some people, it may also be the only place that they have in their community to gather. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, we are seeing that with the commercialization of spaces, it can, you know, contribute to other small businesses shutting down and that sort of thing. And so, so I think it's, you know, I think it's fine to, you know, like try to protect some, you know, obviously there are people that are going to use those places. And I think that that's really understandable. Again, maybe encouraging spaces that are not based around profit, you know, trying to create more opportunities in the community where people can go, where it is more inclusive and more unique and maybe fosters like more sort of originality and creativity within the community.
Well, absolutely. Thank you. Jarman, the Aging in Third Places chapter does not shy away from the unfortunate dangers in third spaces, including many acts of violence against aging people of color. What are the characteristics of a socially just third space? And what can professionals do to ensure these spaces are designed with social justice in mind?
Yeah, this is a great question and a complicated one to answer. But I think, you know, as Melissa mentioned, third places have democratic potential to be places for a diversity of people. And I think that third places are just as susceptible to as any other places to some of the sort of structural racism and historical inequalities that, you know, other institutions in our society are also met and faced with. And so we certainly see in third places violence against people of color. During the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw a huge spike in anti-Asian hate where older adults were, you know, we sort of saw kind of a triple pandemic in the sense that there was COVID and then ageism and racism that they were all sort of encountering and the perceptions that there's an easy target for people to take out their frustrations. And so, you know, these kinds of examples of violence in third places is quite disheartening for us as a society. And these are not new phenomenon. And I think that's something to keep in mind where third places have been around since human societies began forming, really. Third places is not a scientific concept. It's not something new that was recently developed. They've been around for a long, long time. And I think part of what makes third spaces so interesting and unique is the social contract that gets developed in the use of those spaces by the people somewhat organically. And I think that that contributes to the ways in which third places can become socially just. I think that there are questions around sort of who matters and who belongs in particular places that, you know, we should be asking ourselves. Who benefits from certain third places and who's excluded from other third places and who's allowed to create third places, I think are all really important, critical questions for us to ask ourselves, particularly as preventionists and as people interested in promoting population level health. I think that, you know, from sort of an urban planning and a policy standpoint, there's only so much that can be socially engineered to create safe or just third places. But there is a degree to which those places then get used by the people within them and how they get used. In our chapter, we talk a bit about sort of the extreme ends of surveillance in third places, which can also be a quite dangerous concept too. So on the one hand, it could try to encourage safety in third places. But on the other hand, it could also be used, you know, in a very sort of social control sort of way. So finding, you know, a way to sort of balance, I think, all of these dynamics is a really important element of creating just third spaces. And as Melissa was mentioning, you know, the commercialization of a lot of places is a part of this equation too, as well as sort of gentrification of of neighborhood is part of this equation too. It's displacing people. It displaces, small owned businesses, libraries are being underfunded or defunded. And so this all contributes to sort of the mix that creates the social infrastructure that we're talking about, which is these third places.
Oh, German, that's so much to think about. And, you know, speaking of violence, I'd kind of like to circle back on our conversation about virtual third spaces, because in your chapter, I found that it was really interesting that as of 2019, 50.9 million older adults frequently play online video games in the U.S. And I suspect that this number will only continue to rise as the more apps become available and as technology and broadband, et cetera, becomes more readily available. So in addition to the general dangers of the internet, such as catfishing, scams, cyberbullying, what considerations should we have when thinking of accessible, socially just online third spaces?
Yeah, another great question that I feel like we're sort of like in the early stages of really understanding this, as technology has so rapidly changed the way that we do everyday parts of our lives. I think online third places are just as susceptible as physical third places for these sort of scams and bullying and exploitation of people, and particularly older adults who, for many of them, might be just learning how to navigate technology devices and the internet for the first time. I know I am involved with an organization called the Community Living Campaign, and they have a big digital inclusion program. And so just, you know, helping people connect with devices that are affordable to them, teaching them how to navigate online spaces is all part of the programming that they do to help older adults feel not only comfortable and familiar and empowered using technology, but sort of equipped to recognize instances where they might be taken advantage of. And so that's part of the sort of broader education and continuing education for all of us, really, as this technology proliferates so rapidly and so quickly in a way that is very hard to keep up with. That's just one example of kind of the outreach and the education side of things.
Absolutely. Melissa, the Aging in Third Place chapter mentions how third spaces have been used as resources in times of emergency, such as heating and cooling centers during extreme weather. What other ways have you seen or would like to see third spaces be used as conduits for prevention and public health efforts?
Yeah, well, as mentioned before, like, I think that there are a lot of opportunities for third spaces to serve, you know, all the dimensions of wellness. I like to see a really vibrant senior center, for example, in terms of like safety and emergency use, the heating and cooling center option is fantastic. But they can also be, as we know, places for learning. They have a lot of lifelong learning opportunities, classes, opportunities for sharing information, those kinds of things. They're also places for exercise and for nutrition. And then just overall wellness, like, you know, we've seen them used for places for people to have access to vaccines, get wellness checks, you know, get their blood pressure checked, those kinds of things, driver safety, all sorts of things like that. So I really think, the more that we can see third places that could serve as third places, really, taking advantage of those opportunities to serve people in the community and provide wellness. I think that that's where we should be headed. I should also mention, you know, there's a lot of shifting, especially when we talk about age-friendly communities, there's been a shift toward, you know, creating more intergenerational spaces. That's been a big movement. So, you know, when we talk about senior centers, what we're talking about is more age-segregated spaces. So it's, you know, a place where people feel safe because they're in a space where they have that shared identity. They have the shared, you know, they're in an age group and generation that is shared. And there's a bit of a psychological safety to that. But it's also important to think about opportunities for intergenerational engagement, because there is so much benefit also for generations to connect across. And so, you know, as much as possible, encouraging that as well as part of an age-friendly community, I think is important.
That kind of harkens back to you talking about, was it bridging spaces? And then I can't remember the other term. It was bridging and...
bonding spaces.
Bonding, yeah. Yes, of course, bridging and bonding. So I think we've all seen the demonstration that third spaces are valuable. So how can all of us as professionals support the preservation, expansion, and utilization of third spaces? And I'll just kind of throw this question to Jarman first, and then Melissa, I'd love to have you chime in.
Yeah, I think there's so many ways we can think about this. I mean, I think how are particular third places funded is part of the equation and part of the question we need to ask ourselves. Senior centers, for example, are, receive some funding from the Older Americans Act. So these are sort of federal policies that are put into place. And then local parks and things like that come through sort of our municipalities as well. So there is sort of a government hand in sort of funding third places and ensuring that they're maintained and usable. But then, as we talked about, there are private businesses that also have a role in creating and establishing third places, cafes and bars and, recreation centers that people might be members of. And then, I think as well, urban planners have a role in thinking about third places, how we're thinking about maybe mixed use developments, how we're thinking about the intergenerational piece, as Melissa was saying. I think one of the things that I like to think about when I'm thinking about third places is that they're symbolic and real, meaning that they do reflect some notion of our social understanding of who belongs in these places and who they're for. And they also can have segregation potential as well, whether that's age segregation, race or class segregation. So really thinking about, how are these places designed? How are they used? For who are they for? Are all important policy elements. I recently came across this idea of a 15-minute city, which is this notion that sort of our daily amenities should all be designed around about 15 minutes away from us, whether it's walking or biking or, so within, a 15-minute time to get there, which is an interesting and unique way to think about potentially how, we could create spaces for living while preserving, I think, the natural environment, too. As we think about, going back to the question about disasters and being prepared for some of the climate changes that we might anticipate seeing, and where third places might play a role in some of that too.
Absolutely. Melissa, what would you add?
Oh, I think Jarman said it really well. And I mean, I might just kind of like reiterate a little bit the idea that, like for land use planners, I mean, it's really, we as citizens, we can get involved in, like our neighborhood associations, our, land use committees to try to advocate for, zoning and land use tools that do promote density and, multi-use planning, pedestrian oriented development. I think, preserving historic spaces and green spaces, all of those things are important. The affordable housing piece too. I mean, just as Jarman said earlier, gentrification is a huge issue. And I just think that's a big part of making sure that people have access and stay, remain included in their communities. And I think there's a lot too that can be done too, because so many third places are small businesses. There's a lot of tools that cities can use to try to support small businesses, like, maybe encouraging more entrepreneurship through developing like in our town, we have like a commons building where they allow people to test out, like they have, chefs that come in to test out different cooking and things like that. I've heard of connecting with college students to offer their expertise for, marketing or accounting services, those kinds of things to help small businesses. So I think there's like a number of ways we have to come at this. Like, there's just so many avenues to think about that all can contribute to really this idea of just maintaining and building more livable communities and in turn supporting third spaces.
I might add too, I really appreciate your mention of affordable housing, Melissa. I know here in San Francisco, for instance, homelessness is a major issue that we think about. And when thinking about third places, you know, there's always the question of, you know, are we creating hostile architecture that disallows people that are unhoused to you know, find to sort of live in a way that they can, you know, with dignity, really, in our communities. And certainly more housing is needed. But without housing, you know, people are using third places as sort of their home space in some ways. And how do we take care of the citizens in our communities who are in those circumstances in a way that sort of upholds their rights, upholds their dignity? And can we see older adults are one of the fastest growing populations that are becoming unhoused as well? So
I think my key takeaway from that conversation is that, you know, maintaining, creating, and ensuring that third spaces are accessible and just is really up to all of us, right? And so we all have to find out where we fit in the equation, be it by our personal lives or by our work lives, into how we can ensure that everyone has access that's equitable to third spaces. Jarman and Melissa, I could talk about this forever and in other contexts, especially with transition age youth and the college students that I serve in my daily practice as a college professor, but it's getting time for us to land this plane. So as we wrap up today, are there any resources that either of you can think of to recommend to listeners who are interested in learning more about third spaces?
A book that I would recommend is Eric Kleinenberg's Palaces for the People. And that's a great book about third places and really also particularly highlights the importance of public libraries in our community.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. And I would also give a shout out to the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy. He had a book that came out called Together. And that also has been a wonderful read for people in communities to learn about the importance of social connectedness and really gets into third places. Also the AARP Livable Communities Initiative, I would just say if you go to the AARP website and check out their resources, check out what the Public Policy Institute is doing. Shannon Guzman is someone I recommend checking out. Her expertise in planning and livable communities has really helped in developing and launching what's called the Livability Index. So, you know, I would also recommend checking out some of her work, as well as the World Health Organization's Age-Friendly Cities Framework and Guide, which has been sort of the driver of a lot of this work that AARP is doing. So.
Well, thank you both for those resources. And again, to those of you who are listening in our audience, we will put those in the show notes so you'll be able to click on those and have access to them. So Jarman and Melissa, a tradition we have here on the Prioritizing Prevention podcast is to ask our guests a few rapid fire questions to close our conversation. And these are meant to be a way for our listeners to connect with you as a person and also just to be a little bit of fun. All you have to do is answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. And our listeners out there, a lot of times will email me the answers to these questions. So I do know that they're listening and they're curious. So first, in the spirit of our topic today, a question that highlights third spaces. Would you rather have a cozy, quiet third space or a bustling, energetic one? How about you, Melissa?
Ooh, I kind of like the bustling and energetic. I actually just visited Tokyo and I absolutely loved it. So yeah, that's kind of my type of third place.
How about you, Jarman?
I would agree with that. A bustling, energetic third place would be my ideal. And as an introvert, I find that busy places also allow you to find places of retreat as well, which is one of the really also exciting things about how busy places can also create those opportunities too.
So now we have a question aligned with this month's topic, strong connection for older adults. Would you rather have a third space that caters specifically to a certain age group or one that welcomes people of all ages? So the bonding and bridging question. How about you, Jarman?
All ages. Yeah. I mean, we're all aging. So I think it's important to create places that are that would work for all ages and create opportunities for intergenerational connection and solidarity.
How about you, Melissa?
Well, I'm real torn at times when it comes to this question because I have such a heart for senior centers, and you know, they are places that are primarily for people of a certain age, but at the same time, I know that they are themselves doing a lot of intergenerational, you know, activities and trying to be more innovative. And so I like both. I like intergenerational, but I also love senior centers. And I think there is a place for places like senior centers and youth centers and people who can be with, you know, other people that they really share that identity.
Oh, Melissa, you're speaking to my heart. And anyone who knows me and our listeners, they know that I love a good both and. So now this is a question I ask all of our guests. You're reaching into that bowl of M&Ms. Are you looking for a plain or peanut? How about you, Melissa?
Oh, peanut M&M for sure.
And you, Jarvin?
I think plain for me. That
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Jarman and Melissa, for sharing your time, your experience, and your expertise with us. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion podcast, Prioritizing Prevention. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating, sharing with others, posting about it on social media, or setting the podcast to automatically download on your favorite channel. Doing so helps us reach more listeners and it keeps the conversation going. To catch all of the latest from the center, follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook at OH Prevention COE, or visit us at preventioncoe.ohio.gov to sign up for our monthly newsletter. If you missed our last podcast, it was with Shireen Omala, a faculty affiliate at Youth Next. During our conversation, we discussed the 6 dimensions of thriving youth and how communities and professionals can utilize the Portrait of a Thriving Youth model. You can catch this podcast and all of our content on our YouTube channel or your favorite podcast outlet. This podcast was produced by Ivory Lloyd at Global Insight Productions and is supported by Mackenzie Kay and Jen Morrell at the Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. As always, thank you from the bottom of my heart for all your work to get positive prevention content out into the world.
This has been the Prioritizing Prevention podcast. For more episodes, you can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, Apple Music, and many more. This program is funded by Ohio Mental Health and Addiction Services. And for more information about us, please visit preventioncoe.ohio.gov. Thank you for listening.